Rachel Maher, welcome.
Thank you, Winston.
Before we get into business and examine your expertise, what's your background?
I am a chartered accountant, a Melbourne graduate back in the early 1980s, and then I worked in Pricewaterhouse, Malaysia for a few years, qualified, and came back to Australia as a migrant because I love Australia.
So you've worked in business in both areas, in Asia and in Australia?
Correct. Yes, so right. I have worked more in Australia, and due to different reasons, family reasons, I also work in Asia. So I have a multitude of experience working with professionals and businesses in Australia, US, UK and Asia.
So you've seen both the good things that Aussie companies have done in dealing with Asia, and you've seen them making the mistakes.
That's right, Winston. I have seen the mistakes. I have also made some mistakes and I've learned from them. And I am actually a mixed blend of Aussie and Asia.
So you've got a foot in both camps. You should be pretty good for advice on how to make it work.
So true. I would love to share what I know so that people won't make the same mistakes that Aussie businesses did and what I have done as an Asian professional.
Doing business with Asia, Australian companies in the 80s and 90s and now today, what's happened, what's changed, where are we?
Back in the 80s and 90s, it was pretty Australian and I just adapt to the Aussie world. I work with proactive managers, I have worked with nasty managers, I've worked with great clients and I have learned to be vocal, open-minded and task focus and get things done as soon as practicable. That's the good bits that I've learned in Australian businesses.
So doesn't that sort of thing sit well in Asia?
Not exactly, Winston. Unfortunately, in Asia, it's relationship focus and it takes more time and rapport building in order to get the relationship going, to get things done and get a win-win. So there's a lot of trust to be built.
We tend to think we can fly in for a couple of days, do the business and fly out. Is that possible?
Not really. I have done it on behalf of my Aussie businesses and managers, and it was a struggle. I flew in to Hong Kong on Monday from Melbourne. I flew out of Hong Kong on Friday, and there's heaps more things to be done, which is not exactly task-oriented stuff, but the relationship is not there because we just zoom in and zoom out and they didn't really appreciate what we have done, all the good stuff for them.
So you're saying Aussie companies need to develop more of the soft skills to be successful in Asia?
That's a nice way of saying it. You're right, Winston. Working with Asia, I'll give you an example where I have introduced Asian investors into Australia and my good Aussie finance broker did not close the deal because he wanted things done immediately. He wanted to assess their finance at the first 15 minutes of meeting them. And when they did not disclose all the financials, he said, sorry, I can't take you to see the properties that I would love you to buy because you won't be able to meet our bank requirements.
So what did that mean?
That means he has drowned himself in the waters. He did not make the deal. Subsequently, these Asian investors went to another broker who sold 6 investment properties to them.
What sort of skills did that other broker have that the first one didn't have?
The other broker was a bit more cohesive. He listened to me. I gave him some hints. I gave the same hints to the Australian, but because I'm Australian and he's Australian, she didn't practice what I preach. I told the second broker, that they are wealthy. They may not have the cash right on hand, but just take them for lunch, take them around Melbourne, show them where they can buy, where can they invest, tell them all the good stuff that Australians have and the properties that they buy is for the long-term benefit. And he did that for 2 days. And subsequently, these investors came back to him and say, all right, I'm ready to buy. It's after 6 weeks. I've thought about what you have recommended and I will find finance from my Asian countries. You don't have to worry.
And did he spend a lot of money?
They spent about $1 million each.
So not a big deal, but symptomatic of what could happen. I mean, it could have been $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. It
potentially, yes.
So what you're saying is Australians need to learn how to, can I use the word, seduce people? To do it gently, to not rush in.
Yes, that's a sexy way of saying it, but that's true. For instance, another case was a lawyer. She was trying to get my services, review my contracts and agreements. And again, because she's so Australianized, even though she's Greek, she says, oh, it's $3.50 an hour and I'll meet you in the first appointment on certain dates. And I say, hold on, you're not sure what I want and I'm not sure what you can offer to me. I think I will look for other lawyers.
Now, some of those skills are difficult for Australians to have, so you've got to develop them, I guess.
Yes, Winston. So I am very passionate now to try to help our Australian businesses to learn these skills through either one-on-one discussions or a group of talented individuals within their company and tell them these soft skills that it would actually reap them a motherload of revenue from these forthcoming Asian investors.
And it doesn't matter if we're talking about small businesses or large businesses because this rapport building is the same.
It doesn't matter whether you are selling a 5,000 product or 5 million product, the same principle applies. And the tips are that once we have built that long-term relationship, the Asian customers will always remember you and they refer clients to you for free.
That's great because referral's the greatest source of business. Yeah. But I think there's another thing here. As I understand it, Asian universities are pouring out lots and lots of technically qualified graduates, but they don't have communication skills either, so I suppose that would compound the problem.
You hit the nail on the head again, Winston. I was one of them 25 years ago, and I learned through the hard ways how to be a best of both worlds. And today's graduates, I have lots of anecdotal evidence that they are struggling to fit into the Australian businesses.
Because they have the technical qualifications.
Yes.
But they don't have those same soft skills.
Yes, and their soft skills is the reverse. They try to work till 7, 8pm and the Aussie boss say, what are you doing? You are inefficient, David, because you're expected to be home with your family. This is Australia. This is not India or Malaysia, where they expect you to work to 10, 11pm if your boss is still working.
So what you're saying, perhaps, is that not only do we need to train Australians with these sort of skills, but if you're dealing with Asians or you've got Asians working for you, they need to have the same training to relate to both Australian businesses and Asian businesses.
Correct, because I love Australia is partly because I have learned to have a lifestyle. I work hard, I play hard. For example, I drove the kids all the way to Toki for lunch. However, there will be days that I work late at home after dinner. Instead of staying in the office till 8, 9pm, I go home, have a family dinner, have a rest, and then I'll work till midnight. That's all right. So I do have the blend of both worlds.
So you're saying that, as I started off by indicating, you straddle both worlds. Asian businesses and Asian business people have got to learn from Australians in doing
precisely
business with them.
Correct.
And we've got to learn from Asians in doing business with them. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Australians have some great practices and great culture and great family lifestyle, which Asians don't have. They work like a dog anytime, 7 days a week. And when the kids are grown up, they drop dead or they get so ill they cannot enjoy their money. So we need a blend of the best of both worlds.
So, okay, look, I'm anxious. I'm the CEO of a large company or I've got an idea and I'm a smaller company. I want to get in there and do business in Asia. You know, I really want to make it happen. So what have I got to do? What has my company got to do before we do that? Or if we're doing business in Asia and we're not reaping that mother load you talked about, what is it important that we do?
You have three choices, Winston. One is just try your luck and see whether you sink or swim in that context. And
well, I guess persistence will out in the ultimate, won't it?
Oh, that will take you a long, long time and you take the risk of burning the bridges.
Okay, so I'll try my luck. Yep. What's the next one?
The next one is seek help. Seek help from people who understands and who have the hands-on experience of the best of Asia and Australia, and I can help you. I will have a core trainer teams that can consult with you or run a discussion group with your staff and key talents, and we will work out a strategy or a set of best practices that will reap those motherload of businesses.
Okay, so that's the second option. What's the third?
The third option is potentially do a one-on-one coaching session with some of your key talents who are very focused in working with Asia.
But a lot of those people think they know it all. Don't you have a problem getting across to them?
That is true too. However, if they come to my sessions, I will be able to turn them around in a positive way.
So, you've had some successes in this?
Yes, I did. I was working with a small group of business owners, and some of them were enlightened to say that, now I know how to work with Asia. Even though I'm running a tutoring program or I'm running a financial services advisory program, I know how to deal with them better now. I won't straight away say this is $500 an hour and the first appointment is on X date. I will actually build a relationship, understand their business, what they like, what are their cultures, and maybe buy them a beer or a lunch, and then we do business.
And it's little things, isn't it? Like when you hand over a business card, what you should do when they give you a business card. Now, we all think we know that, but do we really?
Yes and no. And again, this is because of my background culture. I knew it through my younger days, but no, Aussies would need to give the business card, admire it, acknowledge their seniority, like yourself, you're a CEO, Winston. Oh, well, you are doing a multi-million business or you are establishing a good small business. Acknowledge, respect, trust. And that's little things, but it's very important to the Asian culture.
Now, on Asian culture, Rachel, you're a woman. How does that affect doing business in Asia?
Very good question, Winston. As you know, women are generally the home-based mum or a part-time mum, even in Australia. However, in these days, more and more women are qualified and recognised as an independent earner, or some of them actually are main breadwinners. And we are progressing well, just that we need to be more assertive, persistent, and I'm one of them. I have the opportunity to work with Aussies, and that's where I learned all the good skills. And now I can actually work with difficult Asian men, difficult Asian clients, and yet I can get the deals done.
I suppose you can use your feminine wiles, which is a bonus.
Yes and no. Sometimes they say, oh, you are a woman, you should stay home. But there will be moments when they say, okay, I'll do it for you since you are a lady.
So if I'm anxious to get to do business in Asia or I want to improve it, how much time have I got to invest with you? With me personally and then with my team? Do you visit Asia with me or do you just train me in those skills, share those skills with me?
Winston, there are multiple ways of doing it. Of course, the best way for initial visits, like I did when I established Asia Pacific for a multinational in US, I did some physical visits, meet the CEOs, meet the C-level executives, meet the key staff, and work with them and say, these are the problems your companies are facing. Let's work together, but I need your executive support. Without your executive support, that's no way to be done, because in Asia, it's very hierarchical. The bosses are the bosses. So that's one way of doing it. The second way is we can do webinars, teleconference. I've conducted video conferences with Hong Kong, Indonesia, from Melbourne. So there are different ways.
What you're really saying is you're prepared to share your knowledge and skills in any way that suits. It's not one size fits all, but you can share it to get the best possible result.
Absolutely right. There is no one solution. There are multiple ways. As long as we are open-minded and we adapt to the clients' business needs, like yourself, you may have needs, you may have clients and offices in Shanghai, Dubai, India, etc., and we will adapt it for your business best interests.
Well, that raises another point. If you had offices all over the place, there'd be a culture clash between Asians and Indians, even though they're all Asia, wouldn't there? So there's an opportunity for you to do some work as well.
Correct, Winston. In fact, one of my clients, a very established multinational IT company in India, And they are actually sourcing from my advice and my consultations to learn the soft skills that they can apply in Australia.
Okay, well, I think we've done enough talking. It's time for action. So if people want to have a chat with you, Rachel, how do they get hold of you?
I can be contacted on my email, info@ausasiatraining.com, or my global telephone line, 61 country code, 0499 978 833.
And Rachel is spelt as Rachel. What about the Ma?
Rachel is R-A-C-H-A-E-L. Ma is M-A-H.
Rachel Ma, thank you.
Thank you, Winston. Thank you for speaking with me today.